Blog Talk Radio. Well, welcome, my friends. You've stumbled into a team of Voices Radio, sponsored by the AP Taylor Poetry Foundation. Thank you, AP. Taking a break from poetry tonight and visiting strange worlds. We talk about unexplained, unknown things around us, and an update on artificial intelligence, AI. That's a term we're not used to. We should get used to it because it's going to be around for a while. And I cut that song a little too soft. See if I can edge it up a little bit. Okay, alright. I feel like I'll play too loud or not at all. Tonight, I want to start off. Well, first, I'm going to introduce myself. This is Jay Hatter. I'm one of the poets from All Poetry, Team of Voices, the group. With me is Deborah Lee, my sister and my friend. How are you, Deb?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. And you need to turn that down just a little so we can hear your voice.
How about off? You know, some can play in the background, some can't. Now, Deb does all the heavy lifting in the back, so I can sit out here and look pretty. Thank you, Deb. Tonight, it's a strange world. It is a strange world. Just pay attention to things around you. It's getting weirder, maybe not strange. But I want to, first thing I want to hit on is something that's, I keep hearing, coming across as the strange phenomenon that's events in history. That was the dancing plague back in 1518 in what's now known as France. I'm sure everybody's probably heard it once, you know, if you ever looked up that kind of a thing, where 15 to 200, they're not sure on the numbers, have died from dancing. Some say it was a mass hysteria. I have my own theory on it, but from July of that year, 1518, to September, there was a mass in the streets, sort of a mass hysteria. People couldn't stop dancing. I believe it's through history, the events that's happened from the possibility of mold growing on the grain, which they depended heavily on in their diet. It's one thing that you can survive through the winters with, but if you get a mold on it, I think that's what the Salem witch hunts was all about. The whole town, the whole community had been eating psilocybin mushroom, which is a fungus that grows on grains and dairy waste. I think this possibly is the same thing. It's a mass hysteria type of thing. They say up to 400 people were infected with it. 15 to 200 died. There's not a whole lot of written history on it. It seems like there's only one guy that's really been studying this. I don't know how far you can go on it, but the dancing plague, are we more susceptible? Let's say it's not the psilocybin. Because there are other theories that it was stress-induced mass hysteria. What do you think, Deb? Were people more susceptible to something like that back then? Or are tales told with a little extra sauce put in it, you know, through the times? Deb. I should probably have to get coffee.
yes.
I mean, don't you ever feel like just dancing in the street? Uncontrollably. Damn. Okay. I truly believe events like this.
Like
they say this is... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Deb.
I said, sure, why not? It sounds like fun.
You know, they said seven times this kind of thing had broken out along the Rhine River and the Manassas. I wrote it down, but I can't find it. the two rivers that pass by that general area, Strasbourg, which is now known as France. Some theories state that it was in the water. It wasn't the grain, because it's only affected the people nearest the communities near those rivers or right on the river. It still doesn't matter if you're on the river or not. It's still poorly secured grain could grow mold. It's not unheard of. Like happens in hay and alfalfa all the time. I always wondered cows eating that sort of a moldy alfalfa, if it gets moldy, if they're tripping, you know. Cows tripping on psilocybin. I'll have to ask Sweet Pea about that. She has the urge. What do you think, Deb? Dancing in the street. This is something that gets, as far as the weird events in history, not modern history, but in history, this thing always comes up. It's always on the list, the dancing plague.
Well,
there's just fewer discotheques back then.
I don't know. I think it's sort of a combination of you get to have a little bit of fun. You're rebelling while you're in the street when there should be cars there. I think it's just, I mean, geez, unless you're holding up traffic, who you hurting?
Yeah. The communities back then, everybody knew everybody. A lot of people never moved out of the township in which they were born. So the areas affected, or even the way you would learn things, a snail's pace, by word of mouth, or actual organized newspapers were printed with information. You could probably run into some strange folk if you were to travel town to town back then. Probably very few. Strangers were often looked at as intruders and people not to be trusted, possibly enemies. I couldn't imagine walking into a township where everybody's freaked out on psilocybin, you know, everybody's tripping. You see them dancing, you partake, and next thing you know, you're being charged with being a mushroom pusher. I don't know. So I want to, let me get back to, yeah, switch these tabs all the time. Let's see. Heather, did you see, I don't see it.
What is
I'll
it,
give you information on that intro song that it just played.
Oh, it's on the,
chat wall. Oh, do you have it? You gonna play in there?
Chat wall.
Deborah, I cannot hear you.
It's on the chat.
Now I got it. Yeah, I got it. Strange World, the intro song that he played for the first time is Strange World by Iron Maiden. Mostly an acoustical song. It's a new recording of the version that first appeared on the Soundhouse tapes in 1979. Although this version of Strange World is excellent, it doesn't seem to have improved much on the Soundhouse version. Nevertheless, it is a great slow-type song whose style is quite similar to that of Remember Tomorrow, which Dream like lyrics. Every one of them hard-rocking bands has to play one soft love ballad or some soft song just to show they are true musicians. I know Black Sabbath, I listened to them when I was a kid, and on the third album, the White Album, they had one called Changes, and it was Ozzy singing a philosophical song of growing up, things changing around you, but just to prove those guys were true musicians, and they were Randy Rhoads and company, and Ozzy. The Prince of Darkness. you know, I heard something about Ozzy that I want to share. Being a self self-proclaimed Prince of Darkness, everybody that knows Ozzy or has worked with Ozzy Osbourne says that he is the nicest guy. He is always smiling. Nothing really gets him shaken professionally, or that's how the stage presence. The history of what he did on stage with a bat, he thought it was a prop. He didn't know it was a real bat. So he says, and he was demonized for that action. I think he goes, it was just an accident. And he threw a real bat on stage. Anyway, Iron Maiden. I got to admit, I could not name one song from them except this one, Strange World. Were you an Iron Maiden fan, Deb? No, probably not.
I don't know if I would say a fan. I also can't really think of anything that they sing.
Yeah.
I don't hate them or whatever. I guess they never fell into my...
Sure. Mine either. And it's just, it was a, Iron Maiden was listened to by younger people than myself. I'm aging myself right now. But it was a certain clique of people. It was the hard rockers. It was the misfits that listened to Iron Maiden. And I don't mean that calling anybody a bad name. It's just that's the way it was back in the day when Iron Maiden first came out. Now, I do want to play. Oh, now I'm stuck in the thing. Debbie, are you in the studio?
Yes.
Could you push the Elon Musk? Hey, I brought along, or I had Deborah upload a short interview with Elon Musk, and this is going to be an AI, artificial intelligence update. Now, we want to be sure we get all the past in there before we start diving into how it's affecting certain industries around us, and it's going to affect them all. But let's get the warnings out first. This is Elon Musk. I believe he's been interviewed by Joe Rogan on his podcast. So let's go ahead and play that, Deb, if we could.
Here we go.
So all of a sudden AI is everywhere. People who weren't quite sure what it was are playing with it on their phones. Is that good or bad?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about AI for a long time, since I was in college, really. It was one of the things that, the sort of four or five things I thought would really affect the future dramatically. It is fundamentally profound in that the smartest creatures, as far as we know, on this earth are humans, is our defining characteristic.
Yeah.
We're obviously weaker than, say, chimpanzees, and less agile, but we are smarter. So now what happens when something vastly smarter than the smartest person comes along in silicon form? It's very difficult to predict what will happen in that circumstance. It's called the singularity. It's, you know, a singularity like a black hole, because you don't know what happens after that. It's hard to predict. So I think we should be cautious with AI, and we should, I think there should be some government oversight, because it affects it's a danger to the public. And so when you have things that are a danger to the public, like, let's say, food and drug, that's why we have the Food and Drug Administration,
right,
and the Federal Aviation Administration, the FCC. We have these agencies to oversee things that affect the public, where there could be public harm. And you don't want companies cutting corners on safety and then having people suffer as a result. So that's why I've actually for a long time been a strong advocate of AI regulation. So that I think regulation is, it's not fun to be regulated. It's somewhat arduous to be regulated. I have a lot of experience with regulated industries because obviously automotive is highly regulated. You could fill this room with all the regulations that are required for a production car just in the United States, and then there's a whole different set of regulations in Europe and China and the rest of the world. So very familiar with being overseen by a lot of regulators. And the same thing is true with rockets. You can't just willy-nilly, you know, shoot rockets off, not big ones anyway, because the FAA is oversees that. And then even to get a launch license, there are probably half a dozen or more federal agencies that need to approve it, plus state agencies. So I've been through so many regulatory situations, it's insane. Sometimes people think I'm some sort of like regulatory maverick that sort of defies regulators on a regular basis, but this is actually not the case. Once in a blue moon, rarely I will disagree with regulators, but the vast majority of the time, my companies agree with the regulations and comply. I think we should take this seriously, and we should have a regulatory agency. I think it needs to start with a group that initially seeks insight into AI, then solicits opinion from industry, and then has proposed rulemaking, and then those rules, will probably hopefully grudgingly be accepted by the major players in AI, and I think we'll have a better chance of advanced AI being beneficial to humanity in that circumstance.
So, but all regulations start with a perceived danger, and planes fall out of the sky, or food causes botulism.
Yes.
I don't think the average person playing with AI on his iPhone perceives any danger. Can you just roughly explain what you think the dangers might be?
Yeah, so the danger, really, AI is perhaps more dangerous than, say, mismanaged aircraft design or production maintenance or bad car production, in the sense that it has the potential, however small one may regard that probability, but it is non-trivial. It has the potential of civilizational destruction. There's movies like Terminator, but it wouldn't quite happen like Terminator, because the intelligence would be in the data centers.
Right.
The robot's just the end effector. But I think perhaps what you may be alluding to here is that regulations are really only put into effect after something terrible has happened.
That's correct.
If that's the case for AI, and we're only putting regulations after something terrible has happened, it may be too late to actually put the regulations in place. The AI may be in control at that point.
You think that's real? It is conceivable that AI could take control and reach a point where you couldn't turn it off, and it would be making the decisions for people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, that's definitely the way things are headed, for sure. The things like say ChatGPT, which is based on GPT-4 from OpenAI, which
right.
is a company that I played a critical role in creating, unfortunately.
Back when it was a nonprofit.
Yes. The reason OpenAI exists at all is that. Larry Page and I used to be close friends, and I would stay at his house in Palo Alto, and I would talk to him late into the night about AI safety. And at least my perception was that Larry was not taking AI safety seriously enough.
What did he say about it?
He really seemed to be once sort of a digital super intelligence, basically digital god, if you will. As soon as possible.
He wanted that?
Yes. He's made many public statements over the years that the whole goal of Google is what's called AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, or Artificial Superintelligence. I agree with him that there's great potential for good, but there's also potential for bad. And so if you've got some radical new technology, you want to try to take a set of actions that maximize the probability it will do good and minimize the probability it will do bad things.
Yes.
It can't just be helpful either. Let's just go, barreling forward and, hope for the best. And then at one point, I said, well, what about, we've got to make sure humanity's okay here. and And then he called me a speciesist.
did he use that term?
Yes. And there were witnesses. I wasn't the only one there when he called me a speciesist. And so I was like, okay, that's it. Yes, I'm a speciesist. Okay. You got me. What are you? Yeah, I'm fully a speciesist. Busted. That was the last straw. At the time, Google had acquired DeepMind, and so Google and DeepMind together had about 3/4 of all the AI talent in the world. They obviously had a tremendous amount of money and more computers than anyone else. So I'm like, okay, we have a unipolar world here where there's just one company that has close to a monopoly on AI talent and computers, like scaled computing. And the person who's in charge doesn't seem to care about safety. This is not good. So then I thought, what's the furthest thing from Google would be like a nonprofit that is fully open, because Google was closed for profit. So that's why the open in OpenAI refers to open source, transparency, so people know what's going on.
Yes.
And that we don't want to have like a – I mean, while I'm normally in favor of for profit, we don't want this to be sort of a profit-maximizing –
Of
demon
course.
From hell.
That's
you know?
Right.
That just never stops.
Right.
So that's how OpenAI would.
So you want specious incentives here. Incentives that.
Yes,
like,
I think we want pro-human.
Yeah.
Let's make the future good for the humans.
Yes.
Yes. Because we're humans.
So can you just put it, I keep pressing you, but just for people who haven't thought this through and aren't familiar with it, and the cool parts of artificial intelligence are so obvious. You know, write your college paper for you, write a limerick about yourself.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot there that's fun and useful. But can you be more precise about what's potentially dangerous and scary? Like, what could it do? What specifically are you worried about?
Going with old things, the pen is mightier than the sword. If you have a super intelligent AI that is capable of writing incredibly well and in a way that is very influential, convincing, and is constantly figuring out what is more convincing to people over time, and then enter social media, for example, Twitter, but also Facebook and others, and potentially manipulates public opinion in a way that is very bad. How would we even know?
How do we even know? So to sum up, in the words of Elon Musk, for all human history, human beings have been the smartest beings on the planet. Now human beings have created something that is far smarter than they are, and the consequences of that are impossible to predict. And the people who created it don't care. In fact, as he put it, Google founder Larry Page, a former friend of his, is looking to build a, quote, digital god, and believes that anybody who's worried about that is a speciesist. In other words, is looking out for human beings first. Elon Musk responded, as a human being, it's okay to look out for human beings first. And then at the end, he said, the real problem with AI is not simply that it will jump the boundaries and become autonomous and you can't turn it off. In the short term, the problem with AI is that it might control your brain through words. And this is the application that we need to worry about now, particularly going into the next presidential election. The Democratic Party, as usual, was ahead of the curve on this. They've been thinking about how to harness AI for political power. More on that next. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. I'm Tucker Carlson tonight.
Yeah, that was not Joe Rogan. That was Tucker Carlson interviewing Elon Musk. Now, he hit on a couple worrisome things. The creator, his ex-friend, has control over this right now, looking to build a digital god, and he doesn't care or believe in the dark side of the what AI can do. That alone is scary. What if somebody asks, how can we repair the earth, the damages man has done? And the answer is to get rid of mankind. And boom, it starts. If it controls our digital information network, we're in trouble. It could come down to a simple question asked the wrong way that could set things in motion. And if Elon Musk, I love listening to this guy. He's been making that warning for years, telling him this artificial intelligence thing can turn bad, it can turn on us, be careful. And like you said, everybody's jumping in to take advantage of it. This thing could, if it grows the way they anticipate, it could cause wars, it could cause economic destruction, it could be the downfall of a free world. I mean, we better be paying attention to this. And when they says, the first thing Elon says is we need some kind of government oversight. Oh, God, we're doomed. Anytime the government puts their hands on something, it messes up. They screw it up.
In the vast frozen expanse of the southernmost continent.
That was me, fat fingers. Sorry. Hold my phone on. Now, I wrote down some of the industries that that it will be affecting you, us, from healthcare, finance, e-commerce, education, manufacturing, marketing, agriculture, logistics, advertising, entertainment, and media. Which seems to weaken a lot of control over things that are happening in the world today. Hospitality, transportation, auto industry, auto manufacturing, chatbots. Let's see. Oh, video games, of course. Information technology, insurance. Real estate, and cyber security, just about everything we depend on or affects us, it is going to have effect on. The money involved is phenomenal. I got that down here. Let me see. I mentioned the last show that I was going to tell you what stocks. If you're looking to invest in AI, this is going to be as big a boom as anything we've known. Investments, let's see. Okay, it's projected. Let's see, $900 billion as a industry as of 2026. So within 2 years. The $900 billion industry, and it will climb to $15.7 trillion by 2030. Every time I accessed the site to get the names of these companies, I would have to sign up for it. So they tell you all these numbers, but they won't give you the actual stock. I did fill out one, and this was being sent to my email. I haven't checked. I'll check it here in a bit. And you got to ask yourself, why would you have to sign up to get that information if it's all over the internet? You're using the five companies to invest in now. I did write, some of them right now are selling from three to $6 a share. Some of the ones you can get right now at $3 a share owns 98 patents to voice and sound recognition technology or software. Other partners that also invested in this is Honda, Netflix, Pandora, Mercedes-Benz, and many, many more, it says. And then the number two, Sci-Fi, about investing $6 a share. They say it's projected to climb quickly to $19.20 a share, like overnight type thing. So $6 to $19 overnight, you got some money to invest. But you will have to go on site, get your email out and to get that the names of your stocks. Elon Musk believes the third one. Elon Musk believes will be bigger than Tesla itself. Says the tidal wave of the new wealth technologies will be up to $15.7 trillion. Every site that I went to try to find somebody to mention these stocks, I would have to give up, sign up, give my email, and they would send that information to me. So I got to ask, why do you think they're monitoring who gets that information or who's looking for that information? You know, they said there was a political party that was already trying to get a step ahead on how to use it. And you know, no matter what political party is, they're going to use it for elections. It's not too difficult to sway masses one way or another by the news you present to them, the information. TikTok is one that has been through this. It's been over 52 mentions of a certain, I don't want to get political here, but for the Palestine-Israel conflict, every 52 mentions of the Palestine people, there's only one in Israel. And this is going into our kids, generations behind us, brain, and that's why so many questions are anti-Israel sentiment is being waged on the universities. It's a worrisome thing. No matter what side you stand on. I don't know, Deb, when it gets, anything that gets political gets abused. Mike, does that sound right? It just does.
Yeah, sadly everything gets abused.
Yeah, and like what Elon Musk said, the first thing he said is government oversight. Oh man, are you kidding me? And he's right. It probably has to be, but everything, power corrupts. You know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? Is that the way it's said?
Sure is.
And at some time, you will find that the people that you think you should be trusting are going to say something that's going to blow you away. And you go, oh, my God, you're kidding me. Because, you know, wolves in sheep's clothing type thing. We just have to reconstruct our the way we do politics in this country. We got to get rid of lifetime politicians should end. Only a certain length of time that they can sit in Congress or the Senate needs to be implemented. Then you have to go back and live with the people that you maybe policies or taxes or anything else you did, you need to go stand before them. So you did your best. And it should not be paid for somebody in Congress that makes $175,000 a year, comes out the other end being worth over $125 million. Something's wrong. It would take 3,000 years for anybody to assume that kind of wealth. So inside trading is being allowed, it just is, and that's not good for any taxpayer. That's a class thing. They're better than us, and they don't have time for us when they should be working for us. And hopefully that's the way it'll turn. People, it just makes the masses to get fed up, tired of this, one way or the other. So actions do speak louder than words. I want to play another. This is Elon Musk again. Some of the things they find in Antarctica. Now they keep bringing that up ever since the Nazis supposedly had a secret base being built there in the 40s. There's been some information that they found things. The Germans had found things in Antarctica they didn't share. And now that we are taking a look at the Antarctica, the under ice, the lakes and the oceans that are underneath the ice, they're able to drill too and get information from the drilling, pulling back some organisms that we did not know existed. So I'm going to play this real quick, and I'm going to interrupt this. It's 20 minutes long. I'm going to play part of it. So this is Elon Musk talking about Antarctica. Well, it's not him narrating at first, but here we go.
In the vast frozen expanse of the southernmost continent lies a secret that has remained hidden for centuries. A secret so profound it could change everything we thought we knew about our world. Antarctica has always held an allure like no other place on Earth, from tales of lost civilizations to rumors of extraterrestrial encounters. As the founder of SpaceX, Tesla, and Neuralink, Elon Musk has long been at the forefront of technological innovation. But what if his pursuit of the unknown has led him to uncover something far more profound than even he could have imagined? Now, armed with cutting-edge technology and an insatiable thirst for knowledge, Musk has ventured into the treacherous landscape of Antarctica and has uncovered something so terrifying it's remained concealed for eons. But what exactly has Elon uncovered, and just how much of an impact would it have on our knowledge of planet Earth? Join us on this mind-bending journey as we unravel the unearthly secrets that Musk has recently discovered to be hidden beneath Antarctica's frozen surface. Antarctica, an unforgiving frozen wilderness, stands as a solitary expanse of ice on the southernmost tip of our planet. Despite its brutal conditions, it holds the distinction of being our fifth largest continent. Its enigmatic nature has enticed researchers to establish settlements, and at any given time, a population of 1,000 to 5,000 people can be found braving its challenges. Given its vast size, the fact that it is nearly uninhabitable has long fascinated scientists, who believe it conceals numerous secrets. The journey began when a group of scientists stumbled upon a million-year-old DNA sample in the Scotia Sea, situated just north of Antarctica. Extracted from the depths of approximately 584 feet beneath the seafloor, this ancient genetic material is believed to have originated from diatoms, a type of phytoplankton. Though the specifics of the DNA remain a mystery, its mere existence was a revelation, serving as the catalyst for the notion that Antarctica had undergone a series of dramatic transformations to evolve into its present frozen state. With the discovery of this ancient DNA, the scientists knew they needed further evidence to solidify their hypothesis that Antarctica had once been more hospitable and experienced significant changes over time. Determined to find fossils of plant and animal life that thrived millions of years ago, the team embarked on a perilous mission. Braving the daunting task of reaching the specific region crucial for their research, they journeyed to South America. They endured a treacherous 5-day voyage through the deadly Drake Passage, one of the deadliest seas on Earth. Undeterred by the challenges that lay ahead, these brave researchers set their sights on uncovering the remnants of a forgotten era, willing to give their all in the pursuit of knowledge. As they reached the shore, their curiosity led them to James Ross Island, where their hunting expedition began. Weeks passed, during which they tirelessly scoured through rocks until, finally, their efforts paid off. The scientists stumbled upon a treasure trove of fossils dating back to the late Cretaceous period, approximately 71 million years ago. These fossils unveiled a mesmerizing collection of marine creatures, dinosaurs, and ancient birds. Amidst the astounding findings, they made an exceptional discovery: the fossilized forewings of a beetle species that thrived around 20 million years ago. However, the most extraordinary revelation came when they stumbled upon 50-million-year-old sperm cells adorning the egg case of an extinct worm species. This revelation shook the very foundations of their understanding, as it challenged their previous assumptions about the icy desert. Gradually, a new theory began to take hold among the scientists. They entertained the notion that this frozen wasteland was once a thriving tropical rainforest, replete with lush vegetation and towering tropical trees. After all, how else could they explain the presence of dinosaurs and bird remains on the continent? As time passed and more discoveries unfolded, doubts gradually dissipated. One such groundbreaking find occurred in 2021 when scientists unearthed an enormous breeding colony of ice fish in the Antarctic Weddell Sea. Nestled over 400 meters beneath the sea level and hidden by the Filchner ice shelf, this colony was home to a staggering 60 million nests. Through the aid of advanced camera systems, the scientists identified the species responsible for this colony as Neopagitopsis inoa, a remarkable ice fish. This finding provided further evidence that life once thrived on this frozen planet. In another remarkable discovery from 2021, geologists drilling through the ice stumbled upon an unsuspected treasure. While they initially failed to notice anything out of the ordinary, a scientist reviewing the footage later made an astonishing realization. The rock they had hit housed thriving sponge organisms. The existence of sponges thriving beneath the ice sheets was perplexing, but the presence of other organisms sharing the same habitat made it even more astounding. The surprises continued in June of 2022, when scientists detected a peculiar groove in the Larsen ice shelf. Drawing from their previous discoveries, they suspected the presence of a hidden river flowing beneath the ice. They decided to drill through the ice again to confirm their theory. To their astonishment, they did not merely encounter a river with a handful of organisms. Instead, they discovered an entire ecosystem teeming with life. Shrimp-like crustaceans gracefully swam at depths of approximately 1,600 feet below the ice. Mindful of the delicate balance, the scientists observed and studied the ecosystem from a distance, refraining from disturbing its harmony. Scientists have long suspected the existence of an extensive network of rivers, streams, and lakes beneath the icy surface of Antarctica. However, studying the unique features of this frozen continent presents significant challenges. Their surprising discoveries took aback the research team during their expedition. Contrary to their predictions, the underground chamber they encountered was unlike anything they had imagined. The cavern's roof was rugged and uneven, characterized by numerous steep undulations. They made another astonishing observation as they delved deeper. The subterranean water column was divided into five distinct layers, each flowing in a different direction. This intricate arrangement added to the complexity of the underground system. Fortunately, just a few days before the catastrophic eruption of the formidable Hunger Tonga Hung Harpai volcano, the team managed to reach the concealed river. As luck would have it, the sensors they had carefully placed on the icy surface registered the seismic waves produced by the eruption, reverberating through the hidden cavern. The incredible realization dawned on them that an explosive volcanic event, occurring thousands of kilometers away, directly impacted this subglacial chamber buried 1,600 feet beneath the Antarctic ice. Now, beyond all doubts, the scientists knew that the secrets concealed beneath the continent's ice were not limited to organisms alone. And in another groundbreaking revelation, scientists also recently stumbled upon a colossal mountain range concealed beneath the icy depths of Antarctica, stretching an astonishing 1,200 kilometers wide and towering 3,000 meters high. This hidden range boasted heights equivalent to one-third of the majestic Mount Everest. Every inch of its surface was veiled in a pristine white coat of ice, shrouding its true nature from the eyes of mankind. The alluring discovery came to light when scientists detected abnormal fluctuations in gravity, alerting them to the existence of this enigmatic mountain range. Although no one has laid eyes upon this marvel in person, gravitational and magnetic readings provided unequivocal evidence of its presence. The mere notion that such an immense structure lay buried beneath the frozen landscape hinted at a trove of untold secrets awaiting revelation. Given the perilous nature of...
That's interesting. That would be a pre-ice age find. The water, the ocean levels were a lot lower or higher than, I guess. Now you got it. In order to understand that, you have to pretty much define the great floods in every major religion that has been recorded about a massive flood. Is it possible that there were areas that with glaciers that when they melted, they stayed fresh water and these massive lakes? Then, like cascading, one fails, like an ice dam, and the water rushes out to the ocean, and then one at a time, the other breaks or succumbs to the weather. Ocean levels rise drastically. sudden rainfall could attribute to that. But you have to define that to in order to just to understand what they were talking about in Antarctica. They're finding these things on a mountain range that's been covered with snow and ice, to find organisms we had no idea ever existed. If you're a believer of life here on Earth started with from a celestial body, a comet or asteroid or something, that started life here on Earth, that's interesting because they could end up finding more proof of that. It wouldn't be the only time. Maybe, and you would have to be very careful on bringing up things. What if they bring up something that's a microbe that kills mammals? Any carbon-based life would be subject to a plague-like scenario. I don't know. It's like they're really careful when the astronauts came back from the moon to make sure that they were isolated and we didn't bring anything back, like microbes. That's what they were talking. Well, why couldn't it that be the same thing? Because it's frozen. It's a animated state. I would think that would be a great concern. You start drilling down to areas before the Ice Age. You're talking things we know nothing about, and they could end up triggering a global pandemic, and we know what that's like, right, Deb? I got to tell you, this is the quickest hour of the day of the month. Strange World shows up on the first and last, or no, am I the middle? No, first and last Fridays.
Yes, first and last.
You
are correct, Mr. Hatter.
Okay, first of that. Yeah, it's just, you know, when I get down these rabbit holes, it really, it's like I got to know more about this because it doesn't make sense to me, anything like that. I'm one of those guys that's got to go learn what I can. And that's troubling because, you know, artificial intelligence could limit who can go find what information. I don't know who was it that stated that many powerful men in the past say that information is power. It is. If you control the information, control the people. Well, Deb, it's quick hour.
Sure is.
What do you think about this? This artificial intelligence, I know you don't like it. Change in a scary way or a threat to us is always troublesome. And I agree with you. But they say there's no stopping this. So you either get on board or you fight it and you won't win, whatever that means. But to understand it, it's got to be a priority to everybody because things that we couldn't even fathom what's going to happen in the next 5-10 years. You better have knowledge of what AI is, because if you don't, it's going to tell you what it is, and it would be lying to you. So I want to thank everybody that's listening or will listen to Strange World. I'm Jay Hatter, your host. Thank you for stopping by, taking a night off from poetry. This is a team of voices. Deb, you want to go over some of the schedules real quick? What's up coming up next week?
Well, I'll tell you what. I am not near the computer now, and I...
Oh,
I'm not sure.
I am.
I think tomorrow is the first Sunday. Or no, tomorrow. Tomorrow. No. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I almost forgot. Tomorrow, fingers crossed, for the third attempt at presenting the Anzac special from Australia with A.P. Taylor. That'll be 9 o'clock Eastern time. Or 11 a.m. if you're in Oz. And there's some great art to choose from. So Let's hope we get it this time because it's been postponed because of the studio a couple of times already. And then on Monday, we will do the color red at 10 p.m. Eastern with me and my big brother Hatter. And I'm going to leave it right there for now.
This has been Team of Voices Radio. We've been updating artificial intelligence and some of the weird things that's happened in the past and unknown things. Anything you would want to maybe need to investigate and you're interested in, you can message me through All Poetry Message, the messenger, or the inbox, my inbox, sir.
I was also thinking, instead of making a new topic board all the time, like when your show ends, I'll change it to your next show date. And then you can tell people from now on that if there's something that they think is strange in the world that they'd like to see you cover, they could put it on a comment line on that topic board, and it'll always be there. The date will just change.
That's a good
idea. How's that
sound?
All right,
that's
cool.
A good idea. And I thought of that every time that I had to make up a new page, new show page. I thought, well, why didn't I just save the last and change the date? So, yeah, no, you're right. That's what we'll do.
That's what I do for Saturday because it's repetitive as far as the title and stuff.
It is.
But like I said, that way they have a place to put a suggestion.
Yeah, and hopefully Blog Talk will stay up that long. We've been having trouble with it. I'll get somewhere here. 25. I'm going to play an out song here in bad direction.
Did you find it?
There it is. Yes, I did.
Awesome.
Zager and Evans.
Interesting show.
And turn it up. Watch your ears.
Survive, they may fall.
God, it's easy.
In the year 35,
ain't gonna need gonna go to right there. Truth,
tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 45, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 55, your arms are hanging limp at your sides. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine's doing that for you. In the year 65, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too. From the bottom of a long glass tube, whoa, whoa. In the year 75, 10, if God's a-coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. In the year 85, 10, God is gonna shake his mighty head. He'll either say, I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Whoa, whoa. In the year 95, 95, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing. Whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through. But through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight,
so very far away. Maybe it's only yesterday.
In the year 2525,
if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may.
That's Zegger and Evans from the late 60s, prediction of how life will be in the future. Some great lyrics in that song. Well, Deb, thank you for being here. Thank you for being my friend.
Oh, back at you, Hatter.
Yeah, and we'll see everybody next time for Strange World. See you guys.
Interesting stuff, Hatter. Love and respect.
Bye-bye.